Welcome to the Here to Be Human podcast, a podcast created to hold space for authentic human conversation through the lens of the feminine. Here, we will dive deep into the realms of motherhood, birth, seasons of womanhood, and so much more. I am your host, Lucy. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Here to Be Human podcast. In this episode, I speak with Lucille. Lucille got her dream home birth and didn't push once. She free birthed her baby in her living room, and at 5 months postpartum, she's here to tell us her story. Lucille is a menstrual and fertility specialist. Since 2016, she's been empowering women to free their bodies of reproductive health disorders and infertility. She made a full holistic recovery from endometriosis and PCOS and has helped hundreds of other women do the same. It is her life's mission to guide women to become their own healer, feel nourished, fertile, and pain-free, revolutionizing their journey in fertility and pregnancy. She's the founder of a local women's health clinic, Calm Studio Massage and Wellness, specializing in services for optimal menstrual health, fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum. Welcome, Lucille. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your beautiful birth story.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to tell it for the first time.
I'm so excited. I feel so honored to, be able to record this story and have it on my platform for women to tap into. It's just such a powerful, powerful journey that you went on.
Yes, which you were very present for. Like, I don't know if you're happy to share, but I'm very proud to say that you were my doula, you know, and my huge support system in being able to do this. So I'm really grateful that that was you. And I actually, my sister recently went to an event, and Jade Hardwick Collings was at the event at Roots Festival.
Amazing.
And what inspired me to reach out to you and be like, you know what, I'm keen to share my story, was my sister went up to Jane Hardwick Collings and was like, my sister free birthed her baby with no complications, no interventions, in her living room, and I saw it and I was there. And Jane was like, she needs to tell her story because we need more positive birth stories being shared. And Jane said to Tilly, there's also some shame that can come up, you know, with any birth story. There's always shame that you can be processing or grief you can be processing with how it could have gone or how you would have done it differently, etc. But I wanted to mention that there's also some shame because it went so well, it's a big deal for me to kind of, I guess, really open up to the public about it, because you don't want to, like, there's a part of this narrative of like, I don't want to offend people that had a really bad birth story, but it was beautiful to get that permission of like, no, it's really important to share the birth stories that actually are really powerful and beautiful and smooth. And it's not as if necessarily things go wrong. They just obviously go away sometimes differently to what people are intending or hoping. But I'm honestly really grateful that my birth went the way that it did. And I think I can dedicate that to the hard work that I've done on myself before falling pregnant, but also during the pregnancy, just really investing that time and energy into being prepared for any sort of scenario whatsoever. So we didn't go in blind. You know, I know that you and I had multiple conversations of like, when you're going into a free birth, you have to create the opportunity and the invitation for going into like, anything can happen still, you know. So it was really good to be prepared for anything. And I think because I didn't run in the opposite direction of any fears that came up, and like you and I unpacked that a lot. And also just unpacking that in my own space and time, I think really helped feel supported and safe. And obviously I'll go into like the environment as well that happened, or that was created for the birth. So I'm still piecing this birth story together, and this is the first time that I'm really unpacking it in real time and viscerally in these last few days. I've been, feeling into how it felt in my body, the different phases of labor, the different stages of labor that I was moving through, the energy of that time during labor, and the sensation of never being able to forget what it felt like when her head was like crowning, and when I had that sensation of like her head just feeling so solid, but also like malleable, like during that time. So where I feel I want to start is towards the end of the pregnancy, because there was a week that my husband took off work because I was like becoming really sooky. I was craving a lot of touch. I could definitely notice myself craving the oxytocin already towards the 41 week stage of pregnancy. I mean, it was probably like literally from 30 weeks onwards that I was just becoming really sooky and like just wanted to, have a lot of touch. And I felt really connected to Mason actually with the pregnancy a lot. Like it was like, I want to spend so much time with you. It's like, I can't spend enough time with you. But particularly in that last week, I was just feeling like a dull ache in my womb. And almost very similar to the sensation of like the day before I'm going to get my period. Like, I was like, wow, it's literally the same. Like, I don't know if anyone else have experienced that, but for me, it was like, oh, I feel like I always had this knowing before I would get my bleed that the stage of labor feels very associated with the stage of like pre-menses. Not active labor, obviously, but like the pre-labor phase. So I remember, feeling that like dull ache, a lot of pressure, and like almost every now and then I get like a subtle contraction. And naturally, because it's the first time I've ever had a baby, I was like, oh, is this it? Like, is this happening now? No, I'm not sure. But I remember you saying to me when we were working together throughout the pregnancy, you were like, you will know when it's on. Like, there will be no doubt in your mind that you will know when it's on. And because I was still questioning it, but still getting those subtle, like, little, I have to call it a contraction, because I feel like, honestly, at that time, in that week lead up to a week before going into a, like, actual active labor, I felt as though I was already like 2 or 3 centimeters dilated. Because I'd let everything just naturally and holistically do, like let my body do what it needed to do. And physically, I have like a funny memory of I asked Mason, it was a sunny morning, sun came out, and I asked him to like get all the dead skin off my my heels. I was like, 'cause you can't really reach your feet. And I definitely didn't want to go and have like a toxic pedicure and like let, all those chemicals into my system. So I was like, can you just do a quick little pedi and make me feel my feet feel fresh? And I was sitting on this on a staircase in the garden, and I had my obviously your legs are just like constantly open when you're that pregnant because you can't bring them in front of you. And we had this huge laughing session, like we just cacked up laughing because he was looking, I had no underwear on, he was looking at my yoni and it was so big. Like my vaginal canal was clearly, by the way, this is going to be like, there's no such thing as TMI in this
I
podcast,
love
I
that.
don't
No, no
think,
such thing.
I hope. Yeah, for those that are visual, here's the visual. Yeah, just like so open and like in full bloom, like almost literally like a lotus, just like ready to, you know, it was like extreme ovulation, like when you get, you know, very puffy, when you're ovulating and everything's a lot more open, pretty much the same, but like on steroids. So because of that, I felt like, yeah, things are getting like things are feeling close, like, and also I felt very, it was so easy to meditate. It was just like everything was becoming very trippy almost, you know, and slowing down. Like things were really slowing down. Like I could literally stare into nature. I felt very connected to nature. I remember just feeling like, wow, I could just watch this, you know, tree like moving for like hours and it feels like timeless, which I haven't experimented much with psychedelics, but I'm pretty sure it's sort of similar. So I was starting to enter that, yeah, that birth portally space. And I loved that feeling. It was just beautiful. So yeah, when I'd get those subtle contractions, I was also using a TENS machine to practice with the TENS machine because I'd heard and listened to a lot of birth stories, and a lot of women had shared the first time I used a TENS machine was in labor, and it was like, what the fuck? Like, this is so intense. It's weird. It's unfamiliar. So I was practicing a lot towards the end of the pregnancy with, yeah, the TENS machine just to like get used to that sensation. And it really was nice on my back, even though the first time we put the TENS machine on, I was like, Mason, I hate this. I'm not doing this. This is not going to happen during labor. Like, he was like, it's okay. Just, you know, practice a little bit, start getting used to it. And I would slowly increase the intensity of the TENS machine. It was really, really nice. I did have a hemorrhoid develop at that very end of the, like that last week. That was just one thing that kind of threw me off a bit, like, oh my gosh, is the hemorrhoid going to get really worse then? Like when I'm actually giving birth or when I've given birth, like that's really something I don't want to deal with postpartum. In saying that, yeah, the hemorrhoid was literally purely because of the pressure on my anus, because of the weight. And her head was engaged and she was, you know, sitting there waiting, ready. So the pressure was just, yeah, creating this hemorrhoid, unfortunately, but we managed to treat it and it turned out to be a blessing because I ended up buying a product to treat the hemorrhoid, which I then ended up using as like a nipple balm and nappy rash balm and all the other things. So it was ended up being a beautiful blessing. So in that time, in that week, it was kind of like pregnant paradise. And about 4 days before I went into labor, I said to Tilly and Mason, I was like, we need to move the TV out of the living room. I'm ready to move the TV. And I remember them both being like, no, like we don't want to move the television. Because like obviously they did it with open arms. It was fine. But after we'd put it away, because just so everyone knows, the living room was going to be the place I wanted to give birth in. That was the birth space, just to give context. And we moved it, and then of course it was like 4 or 5 days, and it was like, you know, there's no television like at in the evenings. Like it was kind of like a nice way to unwind or like have a very gentle amount of distraction. But yeah, there was no TV, so it was like we missed the television. But I was like, no, like I'm not having it. I'm ready. It's not being in this space anymore. And yeah, I definitely felt like ready to start preparing the living room for that. We also turned over the bed sheets. I was like, okay, I think the lasagna sheets are ready. For those of you that don't know about lasagna sheets, you basically put like a plastic cover underneath your actual bed sheet so that your nice bed sheets are protected, but they're not going to stay in the mattress and everything. So it's like a lasagna process of like three layers.
Yeah.
And then I hated the sound for sleeping. Like I'd turn over because I was so pregnant and I hated the sound of the like crunchy, plasticky sound. And it also was like it made us realize it's not breathable. Like it's not as breathable. So for actual like sleeping for like 4 or 5 days, we were like, ugh, we did it too early. But again, because I was having those subtle contractions, I was like, oh, this could amp up to active labor at any time. So I just wanted to be prepared, being my first baby. But that was a funny thing. So we ended up sleeping in the spare room a couple of nights because I just couldn't stand the sound of the plastic sheets. But yeah, during that week, we waited, we ate, I curb walked quite a bit. I wasn't trying to, my intention was not to speed up the process of bringing on active labor. However, because we were approaching the 42-week mark or stage, even though I was prepared, honestly, to go to like 44 weeks, 45 weeks, like whatever the baby, however long the baby needed to take, I was okay with that, as long as obviously my water hadn't broken and there was no risk of that. But Tilly and Mason were actually getting impatient. They were like, when is this baby coming? Like, should we be worried? And I'm like, no, it's fine. Like, I was getting messages from friends and family members being like, hey, how's it going? And I was just, it was really good practice for me to be like, don't let people's impatience infiltrate how you're feeling about how slow this process is. Like, everything is in perfect timing. And just let them be in there, like, anxious or excited, state. But keep a healthy separation from that, whilst also having some like compassion and like being able to laugh about it. It was really funny, like I was just like, haha, like they're just excited and they're allowing the conditioning of, oh, like 41 weeks, 42 weeks, your baby's cooking too long, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, it's absolutely fine. So that was really kind of fun to exercise that muscle in my brain of like, no, it's okay. And I listened to my birth affirmations a lot. I created like a birth affirmation playlist that I would listen to a lot, which was basically just, yeah, changing any narratives around fear or if I felt like I needed to feel more in my body or empowered or just like stable. Yeah, it was really supportive for me to have those birth affirmations. So I actually went into labor on, I went into active labor at 9:30 p.m. on Monday, the 21st. But because of the amount of people that, including yourself as my doula, were like, okay, it's important when you go into labor that you rest and you don't like get all excited and kind of get into your head about the process. Try and rest and just drink lots of water. So because I'd written out, as we wrote out this beautiful birth plan or birth like guide to be guided through the different stages. Because I was having those subtle contractions and I felt like at any point it could become active labor, I was like, okay, I need to rest a lot. I'm going to rest heaps. So that week, and those few days, like before I went into active labor, I was sidelying a lot. And obviously, when you're that pregnant, you're tired. So I was loving resting, but something shifted for me on the Sunday, 2 days before I went into labor, and I was like, I'm resting too much. I actually need to be moving my body right now because I mean, I'm all for rest. I would never say this in any other scenario that you're resting too much, but I could just sense that I was going into like a very kapha, beachy, beached whale, feeling of like, I just felt like nothing was going to move if I'm just going to lay there forever, which was feeling like forever because it was that, that last stage.
But you were also listening to your inner knowing and your intuition as well. You were like,
Yeah.
I have advice, which is always, I always say to people, like, have advice, but always check
Yes.
in with your inner knowing. Like, is it resonating or not? Because ultimately,
100%.
you know
Yeah.
best.
Yeah, and that's what I needed to do in that moment. I was like, I feel like I'm taking it a little bit too seriously with the whole resting thing, like, especially because I walked every day during the pregnancy and I was quite active. And yeah, I just felt like my body was like, can we get some blood circulation happening? Like, let's get some movement happening. In the same way that in the premenstrual phase, I encourage that for myself and for clients a lot. Like, if there's too much stagnancy, then there will be stagnancy, you know? And as we know, like when you're giving birth, you want to be moving your body, or when you're in labor, if you're lying down too much, it's probably not ideal. So I was like, okay. On Sunday, we did, I've actually found a photo like 2 days ago of the Sunday of like a little handwritten to-do list. I can send it to you. It's quite cute because it's like acupressure, yoni steam, walk, a few other things. I think I can't remember. Anyway, I'll look at it later. But seeing that list and then having this game plan for the day after on Monday, Mason and I were obviously kind of in this, you know, beautiful resting phase or state, but I was like, we need to be moving a little bit more. What are we doing on Monday? Can we please have like a game plan and like a little bit of a schedule of like, let's have an adventure day. So then we plan to go to a local bushwalk. And we didn't really get, like, the day started slow, and Tilly ended up joining us later on. I think she came around just before we left this bushwalk, or she met us at the bushwalk. I can't exactly remember in what order. But anyway, she came on this bushwalk, and we're all, you know, outdoors, and we're walking, and we're having philosophical conversations. And it's amazing how when you're that pregnant, and there's so much pressure that every, like I would look around and be like, could I give birth there? Like I'd look at like a tree or like sand or like I don't know, these spots of like, okay, yeah, I could do that. If we're like, if I go into labor, because we were quite far out in on this bushwalk. And yeah, Mason and Tilly were making jokes like, lol, imagine if you went into labor now. We'd just do it. Like, you know, so then we went on this bushwalk, and then we were like, wow, it's 3 o'clock. We're starving, like, we're so hungry. And I was just, yeah, I was so hungry, and I was like, I need to eat now, stat. So we left the bushwalk, from Sun Valley. We drove up to Springwood and we grabbed some sushi, and we wanted to eat this sushi, you know. Outdoors, we were feeling outdoors, outdoorsy. So we take the sushi to a local, another lookout at Springwood, and we eat the sushi. And I see this kind of teepee-looking thing made out of sticks next to a tree, and I needed to pee. And you know what it's like again when you're that pregnant, you can't really hold a wee in. Like it was like, I need to pee. I need to do a bush wee right now. So I did a bush wee, and I was squatting in this kind of like, yeah, you know, it really was this, it felt like some tribal woman or a local Aboriginal man had just come and like built this shelter for me to do this pee. And I remember thinking as I was doing this pee, I was like, this would be cute to give birth here. This would be like special or sacred. And then I finished my pee, I stood up, and water started gushing. My waters broke. Just like that. And it felt like I was weeing without trying to wee. It was such an interesting sensation. And I was always fascinated. What does it feel like when your waters break? Like I was so excited about that. So it was a pretty big gush, but not definitely not as big as what I thought like the next few were going to be. And we managed to catch it on camera. So yeah, that was really like we were all just like, wow, it's actually happening. Like, you know, when you just it's the whole pregnancy, this lead up to like, you know, this moment. When is my waters gonna break? Is it gonna be while I'm driving? Is it gonna be while I'm cooking my breakfast or my dinner or whatever, like in public, while you're shopping? Just like, you know, you create these ideas and scenarios in your head, and then it's just so nice that it happened that day in nature. I'm really glad. My waters broke, and because we had this whole day plan scheduled that I was so excited about, after the bushwalk, we had the intention to go to the public sauna. Again, I was like, in this mindset of like, got to get my body moving, got to get blood circulation going, like pre-menstrual phase slash labor phase, let's get things moving. So after my waters broke, I really still wanted to go to the sauna. I was like, I don't want to not do this. So we messaged you and we were like, what do you think about this? And obviously I was very mindful and careful of like the sanitary things around being in a public sauna. But I wanted to be careful as well because like it's a very soft risk of infection, right? When your waters break. Because I remembered your like guidance of like, once your waters break, no sex. Once your waters break, no bathing. So, but I really wanted to do this sauna. So I was really mindful. We had a sauna. It was honestly, that sauna was so beautiful to drop me into my body. Like the sensation of the heat was just so beautiful. I only did a very short session because obviously I couldn't last very long. Like when you're pregnant, you're already like hot and bothered. And yeah, probably did like a 10, 15 minutes and then came out of the sauna. And by this point, it's about 4 o'clock, 4:30 p.m. And the pool was so stimulating because, when you're at a public pool, people like are talking to each other, kids are screaming at each other. I didn't realize that we were actually going there after school hours as well. So it was just like mayhem. When I came out of the sauna, I was like, guys, I gotta get out of here. Like, this is way too much. I need to go home. I need to be in quiet. I need to be in, like safe kind of energy. I noticed myself, I did not want to engage. I didn't even want to make eye contact with anybody. Like, I thought that was so interesting that I became extremely introverted after the sauna, like just being in public. And I couldn't engage with anyone but Tilly and Mason. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to, look at anyone. I didn't even want to like energetically like smell anyone's perfume. Like I was just like, get me home. So it was really beautiful. After getting home, I probably ate a bit more food. And I think Mason and Tilly were showing each other reels on Instagram, and I was like, guys, I need quiet. Let's just start going into like, this time. So that same night, Tilly's still here after the sauna, and we have a spare bed. And Tilly, we didn't have this discussion till later, but she was like, I should stay the night. So she stayed, she went to bed. It was 9:30 p.m. We all went to bed, except I didn't go to bed. Because I was like, yeah, I'm going to sleep. It's just like, any other night, with obviously being mindful that my waters had broken. But I also wanted to be like, look, my waters are broken, but doesn't mean I'm going to go into active labor like in the next hour. It could be in the morning, it could be a day from now, whatever. Like, just monitor yourself and go to bed and treat it like any other night. And then the contractions started to kick in. For sure. Like, and it was that the intensity, the difference between those subtle ones that I was feeling towards the end of the pregnancy of pre-labor, compared with these ones was like there was a difference. And I was like, okay, so things are starting to amp up a little bit. So if I'm honest, I hated these contractions. Like, it was honestly, it took me back to my endometriosis period pain from when I was like a teenager. And it was intense. It was intense. I tried to rest. I tried to lay down. Mason was with me for this first part of it. So he was there. I always imagined like, oh, when I'm in labor, am I going to tell Mason? Is he going to be there? Is he going to be at work? I don't know. But I was just surrendering as much as I could, because it was that first initial sensation of those intense contractions. It was like, okay, it's on. Like, we're here now. And I remember Mason coming in. It was probably like this, honestly, went on for 3 to 4 hours of just those more shallow. The reason I say shallow is because I noticed the contrast later of the second stage of labor, of how it's like, that bearing down sensation. Like she started to move with each contraction. At this point, it doesn't really feel like there's much movement happening, but the sensations are still very, very intense. So, I'm leaning on the bed a lot and swaying. We've got red lights. I'm pretty sure I asked for an eye mask because I just wanted to be like fully in like full darkness as much as possible. And at one point, because it had been so long since dinner, Mason came in and he was eating Weet-Bix. Like he was eating Weet-Bix on the bed. And I was like, Mason, I'm like in the middle of going in and out of contractions. I'm like, I can hear you eating. Don't eat right now. And he's like, okay, babe, sure. So I'm going back into like my contraction mode because I had to come out of that just for a moment to be like, no, hard no. And he was like, okay. And he tested this because he was like, okay, she's fine. She's going back in. She doesn't really know what's happening around her anymore. Starts to slowly start to crunch the Weet-Bix, like just tries to be really silent, but is still going. And I was like, you know what? Whatever. He's gonna eat. I can tune it out, but I can't actually remember. I might have to ask him. Did I ask you again to stop? I'm not really sure. But I just thought it was amazing how I had like bionic hearing. Like I could hear the like tiny, every single tiny little crunch of sound from him eating. So I just knew that from then on it was gonna be like even more sensitive, to sounds and to energy and things like that. So after about, 4 hours of that, I moved to the bathroom, and it's amazing how I could not walk if I was in the middle of a contraction. Like we had to basically wait for, okay, I'm having a contraction. This is all I can focus on right now. I have to stand here, hold me for a minute, and then okay, I can literally walk at like sloth pace to the bathroom. And I couldn't really be touched either. Like when I was having an actual contraction, I noticed that I just didn't want to be touched. I didn't want to be massaged. I didn't want anything. So I made it to the bathroom and the sensation of vomiting came up. Like I was definitely, I knew, I always knew the whole pregnancy. I was like, I'm going to vomit in labor. I just know. Because of my history with period pain from having endo and PCOS, I felt like my body would have a memory of like because the pain or the sensation was so strong that I'm definitely going to throw up. So I did. But it was nice to be like mentally prepared for that. Threw up a few times, which gave me some relief. And then I remember I'm sitting on the toilet and Tilly comes in and she's woken up. So she's slept that whole time, which is really good. She's come in. And by the way, she's had no idea that I'm in labor until I come into the bathroom. Like, she doesn't know I'm in active labor until now. So only at this moment, she's like, oh, like you're vomiting and it's happening. And immediately, I am just craving more skin on skin. So I just put my hands and my head like on her belly under her t-shirt. And I'm just like, oh, like, I'm so glad you're here. And I was just craving more of that skin on skin sensation. At this point, Tilly was really smart and she was like, Mason, you should go to bed and sleep and I'll basically take over and we'll kind of do shifts. Because for all they knew, or for all I knew, it could be 3 days or it could be 3 hours or it could be 10 hours. Like you just don't know. So it's good to get rest, right? So Mason went to bed and I was really okay with that. It was actually really nice to have a transition of like, he's resting. And I'm just going to stay in my zone, and Tilly's got my back. So we came back to the main bedroom where I'd initially gone into labor, and Tilly literally moaned through every contraction with me. Like I was with every contraction, I started to vocalize a lot more. And I remember wanting to open up my larynx to help support the baby, coming down, like opening everything up more and more and more. So I was going very, very deep with my sounds and really vocal. And Tilly would basically jump in each time. And it was beautiful because it would kind of amplify and give me more and more permission to like open up my throat and my body. Even though I was struggling, to be honest, at this point, to lie down, like I found myself just fidgeting a lot with the contractions, like lying down on my side because I was trying to rest because we were still in the first stage of labor. I was like, try and rest as much as you can. And Tilly left the room for a moment and she went into the birth space, into the living room. And that was so fine. I felt really good just having some time to myself. And she started drumming in the birth space. And I remember being in contractions, but hearing the subtle sound of the drum. And it was a beautiful, I'm getting like shivers, remembering this. It was a beautiful remembrance of how sacred and spiritual this experience is. Because, of course, it's so easy to get, like, it was very easy for me to get carried away with, like, so physical, like, all, like, it's so easy to just only focus on the physical side of it. And it was this beautiful opening. And I could feel that she was actually opening the portal for birth. Like, she was having the intention of like, this is happening now, and opening up the birth space even more. So that was really beautiful. And I remember she said to me, like, I felt like that portal was activated. And she said to me, remember, Lucille, this can be a spiritual experience if you choose it. And I was like, I'm trying, I'm trying. It was innately spiritual in how it was unfolding. Like birth is spiritual without even it trying to be, but it was a beautiful reminder of that, So at sloth pace again, I then move into the living room, only moving between contractions. And at this point, Mason's still asleep, and I tried sitting, and there was absolutely no way. I could not sit down. I could not lie down. However, because I was getting so tired from not sleeping, Tilly was like, let's try sitting on the bounce ball, on the like exercise ball that I spent a lot of time on during the pregnancy. And I was having contractions well. So I was sitting on the birth ball, but sleeping in between contractions. And Tilly was holding my shoulders, sitting on a couch behind me, basically not letting me fall off the birth ball. What so I could sleep and like rest in between contractions. It was so beautiful because I felt her behind me and I knew she was there, but I was also like, sleeping, like having a conscious sleep or a micro sleep, and then contraction again. And at this point, I could definitely feel like the contractions were getting closer together. And I think she was messaging you at that time. And I had a quick read through. It's been like months since I looked through that group chat, but I'm pretty sure you said to her, try and get some fluids into her. Because then I got off the birth ball and I'm standing leaning on the table that's in the birth space, which was originally the TV stand, turns into my leaning stand for birth, for labor. And Tilly tries to give me this drink. I can't even remember what it was. But I was just like, I literally can't stomach it. Like I had two sips and I was just like, I really can't do it, and back into focus. So at around this point, I remember Mason coming back out. So he comes back and I was so relieved to see him. Like I was like, oh, I'm so happy you're back. Time, it felt like it had been probably 3 or 4 hours that he'd been asleep, but it felt like 10 minutes. It was such like time is amazing when you're in that space. It's so, like non-linear. it could be 5 hours, but it could be half an hour, or it's just amazing. Or it could be half an hour, but it feels like 5 hours. Like it can be the complete opposite. So I was relieved for him to be back. I was really happy to see him. And then at this point, I can hear them turning the shower on. And I remember having this moment of like, wow, I am so vulnerable right now. I cannot believe that me feeling this way, that other women, when they're in labor, then have like people, random people coming in or people telling them what to do or physically intervening. Like I had this moment of like, I cannot believe that in this state that women are in those situations. And I felt so compassionate in that moment and sent like this love like note to all the women in the world that had been like, interrupted in that process. Or had felt like that, like when they reflected on it post-birth, like that was so invasive. So I remember feeling like vulnerable but so safe at the same time because I had Mason and Tilly there. And so they turned it, so sorry, I'm jumping a little bit. They turned the shower on and Tilly was like, okay, honey, we're going here now. And she'd kind of just like, I would just like, if someone had said to me, okay, we're going into this room now, I would just be like, okay. just like I trusted them fully. So there was no question in my mind of like, obviously, like there's a limit of like, if my body physically couldn't do it, I would listen to that and I would say no, or be like, wait a minute, contraction. Okay, we'll go now. But I just knew that I knew that they knew that what was good for me as well. So there was this beautiful receptivity between the three of us of like, there wasn't a lot of talking. They were just listening to my cues and, observing me. And I was also listening to their guidance of like, okay, we're going to try the shower now. So we're in the shower, the water, hot water on my back, the warm water. Oh my gosh, just heaven. I was in there for about 30 minutes. And somehow I still had the mental capacity to be like, guys, don't waste too much water. We've got to save it for the birth pool. Because I think I'd done so much preparation of like, we don't want to waste water because we want to keep it warm or have enough available for the birth pool. So I thought that was really funny. I laughed at myself in the moment, being like, oh my gosh, Lucille, like, how
Classic.
is it that you're going in and out of like you're in contractions, but you're still able to like be aware of what's going on? And that was beautiful in itself. It reminded me of when you have the compounds of tea and it can be stimulating, but then there's the theanine in it to keep you like grounded and meditative and like dancing between the two. So then I moved back into the birth space, into the living room after having a hot shower. And this is when things started to really amp up. And I started bearing down. I started getting onto my all fours slash leaning back a little bit into my hips and doing a bit of a sway like back and forth between the two. And I remember the floor being covered in our, we bought like these cotton painting protectors, like protecting sheets to protect the floor. And I started bleeding. Like I saw that blood was slowly just starting to trickle from my yoni. And I was just observing. It's so interesting thinking about it, looking back now, because I was observing my body as if I wasn't in my body. I was holding space for like, okay, that's happening and everything's okay. And like, oh, wow, your body's doing this. Instead of like, this is happening to me, it was like, it's hard to explain, but when I watched my birth video last night for the first time, there's a lot of moments where I'm saying to Tilly and Mason, my body's pushing, my body's pushing. So I had this beautiful, like, healthy separation of like, okay, I'm just observing and holding space for what my body needs to do to make this happen, which is pretty cool when you think about it. And I think that I again put that down to just trusting that I was safe and that like no matter what happens, I just need to give my body the reminder that it needs to do what it needs to do and it's going to be okay. And on top of that, knowing that if women can give birth in a coma, that you don't need to do anything for your body to give birth. I remember Mason saying that to me very early on in pregnancy. He was like the one that gave me permission to, like, babe, you can free birth, you can do it, like, you'll be fine, you got this. He was the one that was like, yeah, you can totally do this, I believe in you. And I was like, really? Okay. And yeah, he said to me, women can give birth in a coma. So your body will literally push the fundus will move it down and it just happens. And I was like, okay. So that really stuck with me, as well as what I recently shared on Instagram, which was, yeah, like, you think you're gonna die, but you're not gonna die. Your body will do it and you'll be okay. So I had, that was kind of in the back of my mind, or was, I think, what I'd practiced throughout the pregnancy to give me the reassurance. So I'm bearing down, my wrists are getting so sore, but because of the oxytocin and the adrenaline, they're keeping me going. Like, I know that my body, I was like, I'm gonna be fucking wrecked tomorrow. Like, or whenever this is over, I'm gonna be so sore and feel like I've been hit by a truck. I just knew that. But because, yeah, the adrenaline in my system, it was just like, it's fine. I could literally do this for two more days if I needed to bring this baby into the world safely. And that's when the second stage of labor hit. And you know what? I much preferred the contractions on this in the second stage of labor compared to the first stage, because I could actually feel things moving, and it was borderline, like, the pressure then of her head coming through, it was borderline pleasurable, of like, using the sounds and that feeling and that sensation of, I could feel her moving more, and I was obviously becoming more dilated. I don't know how to, explain it, but it's basically like, I was like, oh, like, I can do this. This is so much more enjoyable than what was happening before. So I was riding that wave of those, like, more intense contractions. Obviously, contractions are getting closer together as well. And then I'm in my own world, but I know that Mason and Tilly are setting up the birth pool in the same space next door to me. And I know that the altar's behind me, but I'm literally not interested at all in listening to, like, my birth playlist that I created or my affirmation playlist for birth. I'm literally in the most awkward position between a couch and a chair, but I just couldn't move. I was like, I'm here, I'm safe, my altar's there, they're setting up the birth pool, everything's great. Like, it just, and there was blood, like, pouring onto the floor. Not just to be clear, not a huge amount of blood. It was only like an early stage of someone getting their period, for example. I was like, it felt safe, the amount of blood that was coming. So the birth pool's finally ready, and I get into the birth pool, and oh, that feeling of just getting into the birth pool was so beautiful. Can you hear her in the background? Yeah, she's starting to vocalize. She'll be ready for a feed soon. So I remember getting in the birth pool, and I just felt so warm and supportive. And I started to, like, as I was in the birth pool, I could start to feel her head with each contraction coming down, but also moving back up. So I will never forget that sensation of her head, like, coming down, then going back up a little bit, then coming, but each time she came further down, sorry, with each contraction, I knew she was coming down a little bit further each time. So it was almost like contractions coming. So then her head, I could feel her head, and we also had a mirror underneath me, which, look, to be honest, I wasn't really, like, super keen to see. It was more that I wanted to stay with the feeling of the whole process. And at this point, I didn't have my, I don't think I had my eye mask on anymore. So it was really just, like, internally feeling everything. And I was like, oh, the ring of fire is going to be here soon. And then I didn't actually, like, get the ring of fire. Like, it never really, like, it was a slight burning sensation, But if I'm completely honest, I can't recall feeling like, wow, this is fire. And I was fully mentally preparing myself for that. But I was like, oh, it just never happened. It was just, and I think honestly, like, I think it's because I wasn't pushing. You know, I was just letting my body do the contractions, and then her head would come back a little bit so I could actually get reprieve and a break from, like, yeah, it wasn't as if her head stayed in the same position for very long until I was like, oh, okay, she's coming back a little bit. And then she's coming back down. And I remember saying out loud, yeah, again, my body's pushing. I knew she was coming. And I'm pretty sure at this stage, I definitely told Tilly Mason, I was like, is Lucy coming? Like, I knew the baby was probably going to be coming in about an hour. I remember saying to Tilly, I think this baby's going to be here in an hour. And literally on pretty much on the clock, I was right. It's like, I don't know how I knew that, but it's just like, wow. I look back and I'm like, how did I know that she was coming at that time? But I suppose it's because, yeah, I could feel her head was bearing down further and further and further, and I was becoming more and more dilated. And I remember saying to Mason and Tilly, okay, this next contraction, I think the head's going to come out. Like, it's not just going to be the crown of the head, it's like the whole head's going to come. And I was right. In the next contraction, the head came out, and I think I say to Mason and Tilly, baby's coming. Is baby immersed? Is baby immersed? Because again, I just wanted to keep my eyes closed. I didn't want to open them yet. I wanted to just feel it. And I think I then, like, did open my eyes at some point, and I can obviously just see the water. And I say to Mason, bring baby, or catch baby, or bring baby, or help baby, or something like that. And her little foot was just had like the placenta cord wrapped around it a little bit. So he just untangled the placenta around her foot, and she came out. Like, once her head was out, honestly, I didn't do anything. I didn't push or anything. It just the rest of the body just came out. And I will never, ever, ever forget Mason actually didn't even hold her. He just floated, like, he just gave her a little, like, guidance through the water and floated her towards me, so that I could see her in front of me, because I was still on my all fours in the pool. And I just remember seeing her underwater, and her eyes were so black, like just these big, beautiful black eyes. And just taking that pause, and then she opened her mouth underwater, and my instinct was like, okay, time to come out. You know, because it was like my first water birth, and I was like, oh, what, like, mouth, like, your brain, it's so hard to be like, don't drown, come up. You know, even though she would have been fine probably for another few minutes. But yeah, I'll never forget that feeling of just looking at her. So I brought her onto my chest straight away. By the way, at this point, I've got no idea that she's a girl. I don't know the sex of the baby. I'm not focused at trying to work that out at this point. I'm just soaking the fact up that, like, she's here, and we all just had this beautiful sense of relief. And taking that pause to be like, wow, I just did that. And she didn't make any sound, she wasn't crying. And she also wasn't covered in meconium, which later on you told me is
Oh,
completely not.
vernix, you mean?
Sorry, vernix, not meconium. Oh my gosh, wrong substance. Wrong birth substance. Yeah, no vernix, no white like coating on her body. And I remember later you saying to me, like, oh, that's totally normal, because you just let her go as long as she needed to. You know, I loved that. But only once I'd held her for a little bit, and I had the instinct to just pull a bit of mucus with my mouth onto her mouth and just spat it out into the pool. But she was so calm and so unvocal that I was like, guys, is everything okay? You know, I just took a moment of like, I had a moment of fear of like, is the baby okay? And Mason was so calm and he just said, baby's fine. Call them in. Call them in. Just baby. So I'm just talking and I'm like giving the baby like, yeah, a little bit of touch and love. And then slowly she makes a little, like, it wasn't even a big cry. It was just like, meow, I'm here. And yeah, this beautiful, like, non-invasive, sacred time of just, yeah, welcoming her into the world. And I said to her, I'm your mama. I said, I'm your mama. And I just, yeah, I love that moment. I'm so glad it's caught on camera. Because Tilly took some birth videos at that point. I had no idea that that's what was happening, but it was really nice to look back at it last night. And yeah, it was really, really beautiful. And only then, after like maybe like 3 or 4 minutes of holding her and being with her, that I was like, okay, what sex are you? And then only then I looked at yeah, her genitals, and I was like, oh, it's a girl. And I always knew it was a girl. Everyone told me, having a boy, you're so big. And it was a girl. And I always knew. I always knew. And that was really special to share that moment. And then you turned up like a few minutes later. Like you literally walked in after she'd been born, and it was just beautiful. And the energy of the container was so, it was still so calm. There was no worry, there was no panic. Obviously, there was probably a big sense of relief on Tilly and Mason's part of like the baby's here after that long labor, or what probably felt long. And yeah, I really loved that you were there for the birth of the placenta, because remember how there was a part of me that was like, how do I know that the placenta is ready to come out? And I'm really grateful for you guiding me through that process. So I, just for everyone listening, I got out of the birth pool, because I honestly could have, it's amazing, like you could just stay there for hours. But because everyone was like, okay, it's getting a bit cold, let's get you out of the birth pool. I put some warm socks on and I put her on the breast, and I felt those gentle contractions of the placenta coming. And I was like, oh gosh, I gotta do this again. I just want to rest and relax. But yeah, you know, it's like still need to get the placenta out. So I stood up and you were amazing at just guiding me. And you told me to just pull on the cord a little bit and just see if there's any give. Like basically just feel into, okay, does it feel like it wants to come, or does it feel like, oh, this doesn't feel right? And you just said, you'll know. You were like, you'll know. And so I pull a little bit and I'm like, oh, I'm actually not sure. But looking back, the weight of it was actually the weight that made me question, is it still attached, or is it detached or not? But I remember you reassuring me, being like, oh, literally all the signs are there that the placenta is probably detached and, you know, it can come. So I was like, all right, let's do this. And then I birthed the placenta standing up. And I remember saying to all of you, wow, I feel like I have just healed my entire feminine lineage and bloodline in that moment. Like,
It's so powerful.
yeah, it was epic, that moment, seeing the placenta as well and realizing, wow, that is huge. That is so big. You know, the size of the placenta was big. And I was like, wow, that's why I was so heavy and everything was so uncomfortable. Like, you know, at times towards the end of the pregnancy. That's pretty much most of what I can recollect of the birth and that process. And I remember being not just in awe of the fact that my body could do it, but being in awe of all the women in the world who give birth. It's just so powerful and sacred. Yeah. And I remember feeling proud of myself. Like, I did this. I really did it on my own, pretty much, you know. I felt proud, and I felt like I'd worked really hard for this, you know, and it was very rewarding. And then I was definitely ready for some food and a big sleep. Yeah. That first feed, that like kind of golden hour feed, I think she was on my left boob for like 45 minutes. I found some footage of someone. I think it was maybe Tilly was filming in the corner of the room. And the adrenaline is definitely still going. So I found it very easy to like, all of us were unpacking stuff like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? And wow, this happened. And what about the birth pool being perfect? Like Tilly was like, I can't believe how amazingly Mason set up the birth pool. By the way, Mason is a plumber, everyone. So it definitely helped that he could, you know, do all his little plumbing tricks of the trade to make it happen quickly and also for us not to run out of hot water. But yeah, Tilly was like fascinated by that. And I was fascinated by the fact that I didn't push her out, but my body was just doing it on its own.
Did you feel an urge
Yeah.
to push, or did you just feel like your body was doing it and you kind of were a passive participant kind of thing? Like, did you, because
Yeah.
usually a lot of women get like an uncontrollable urge to bear down and
Yes.
you kind of can't stop going with your body, like joining your body. So it's interesting that you were able to just pull back a little bit from that active response and just allow what was happening.
To be honest with you, when you say, when you put it in that sense of like it was a passive pushing, my body was doing it, but obviously I was joining in on that
Yes.
pushing without actually, like, of course, if my body's doing that, I wasn't pulling, I wasn't holding back, I wasn't going, no, don't push. I was fully opening and just
Yes.
letting it happen. But that was naturally creating. I think, yeah, it's good to clarify this because I don't want people to be like, oh, like, I mean, to be honest, I would love to hear someone say, oh, I like tried not to push and this is what happened. I'm so curious to actually, yeah, see what that would do for another person in birth. But there's obviously this sensation of your body is naturally pushing for you. And then I was just basically passively supporting that. Like I'm just trying to like remember the, you know, the feeling of like you're, it feels like you're, it's like you've suddenly got abs all over your torso. That's how it feels. It's like you've got abdominal muscles like back and front and side. And like, you know, I feel like my abs were like up to here and that I'm doing, it's like doing a crunch and vocalizing that at the same time, except I wasn't voluntarily doing it. My body, I allow my body to be the guide for that. And then, like you said, sort of passively pushing, if that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Because I didn't want to run. I guess the pushing for me is like, I don't want to tear. My intention for that, just to give you context, is like, I don't want to tear. I don't want to rush it. And I was enjoying that feeling of her like coming back just a little bit and then coming down a bit further, like with each contraction. And I feel as though if I was intentionally pushing when the contractions were happening, as in if that's what I was focusing on, is trying, I've got to push her out, I've got to, you know, push, help, like that whole, I was rewiring that narrative of those things you see in the movies of push, get the baby out. I was like, I'm protesting to the push. And I was like, I'm not pushing. I just want her and my body to do it. is the best way I can kind of describe it. But of course, there is an innate push. Like your body, I guess, can't physically get the baby out without that pushing happening. Do you know what I mean?
I relate it to like if you really need to do a poop or if you need almost the opposite is like when you need to throw up. And it's like at some point it's inevitable. And then you have to just go with that rush of energy in either direction of your body.
That's exactly the vomit one for sure. 100%. It's like that. It's like vomiting. Your body's vomiting, and then you have to obviously help your body a little bit, to finish the process. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it is a bit like that. For sure. It was like that.
Wild.
So I loved it. I loved giving birth, honestly. It's funny because like people say to you, oh, you forget how intense it is. And no matter how smoothly things go, it's still traumatic because it's so much for the body to go through. But I just remember so viscerally what it felt like. And I think that's because I was so safe and present. Fresh postpartum, those first 5 days, physically was actually more challenging than the birth. It was really rough. I pretty much didn't sleep for 5 days, 5 nights. And after giving birth, the one thing you want to do is rest. So it was pretty taxing on me, to go through that. Like, I actually didn't anticipate how hard that was going to be and challenging that was going to be. And then on the other side of postpartum, I had been planning my postpartum since week 8 of my pregnancy because I'm in the women's health space. I've seen what happens to women when they're not supported postpartum. And they need so much help. Especially like first time mums that are still learning. I mean, actually, no, not even first time mums. Mums with babies, even more so in a way too, because they have a little one running around and they want to embrace their newborn. So, I think because I didn't know what to expect, or it doesn't matter how much preparation you do until you're actually doing it in real time. You don't really know what you're in for. I don't want to scare people that want to have a baby, and be like, postpartum's really hard, but it was challenging that first, those first 5 days. And also the most rewarding thing that I've ever been experienced in my whole life. It's this beautiful, dancing between the two of being like, I could not be happier. I've never had this much love and gratitude and joy and excitement about this baby that I've grown and, fed for the last 9 months internally, and now I have to feed and keep growing externally. It's so rewarding and beautiful, but it's rough. And it's also that transition from maiden to mother is, I feel like the initiation for motherhood did not necessarily happen when I gave birth. For me personally, I feel like it's been an evolving process over these last 5 months because I've noticed myself find it really hard to let go and also to have a grieving process of my freedom in terms of, I feel like I had so much time to like go to the sauna or go and get my hair washed or take myself out for lunch or just these tiny little things or even get a massage. These tiny little things that were really, really played a huge role in my maintenance of my own health and my own vitality, which is so important to me because of the field I'm in as well. And because I've been on such a big healing journey myself, suddenly, yeah, I'm speaking more into the present as opposed to like fresh postpartum, because I would love to touch on just gently those be that that beautiful 60 days or 40 days that we had like a postpartum cocoon. Because after that first week, I definitely started to very slowly, my nipples weren't so sore. And I started to slowly feel very whole and complete in just being, honestly, just being with her and Mason, and Mason being such a huge support for me, and people dropping us meals and things. But yeah, that initiation has been a process in this post time of postpartum. And yeah, just letting go of those little, having, yeah, grief for those small things that had such a big meaning, I guess, to me in my own life. So prioritizing, shifting all my attention, my energy onto her has been growth, big growth for me. But yeah, that trend, it's been very, I have been a very, I feel I've been a very honorable mother to her. I'm trying to give her the most presence possible and not distract her with toys. And honestly, all they want is you and your presence and your attention and your love. And, being a business owner and being like running my own business and working in the fertility space and supporting clients for all these years, I'm also noticing my priorities shift, but at the same time, I miss that part of myself. And I'm in this window actually at the moment quite deeply. These last 2 weeks have been pretty, yeah, like unraveling for me with my identity. But fresh postpartum, we decided to not have any friends or family visit for the first 3 weeks. So we told people that before I was giving birth during pregnancy, we gave people the notice of like, hey, just so you're aware, we're going to be playing it by ear with visitors coming. We really want to have a very quiet postpartum. Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm just really happy I invested time during my pregnancy to set up for my postpartum. Honestly, so that all systems were just go and working. Like I had signs out the front of the house to say, don't ring the doorbell. Drop a meal in this esky. Here's a QR code for the meal tray. Here's a QR code to like meals that you can cook. And yeah, gosh, like sometimes I look through photos or videos of that time in those first 6 weeks, and they're almost palpable for like how, yeah, cocooned we were, and how I wanted her to be in the womb. A little like she was obviously earth side, but I didn't want to like stimulate her with life too quickly. I wanted again, like honor that slow process. And something I noticed when we started to come out of the cocoon and go back into the world again that I really struggled with was the scent. The smells of other people. That is literally the one thing that even now, I still struggle with.
Same.
Like, yeah, like I was sensitive to that before pregnancy, of like when people, wear perfumes or even strong essential oils and things like that. It's like, whoa, it can be, quite intense on your system. Yeah, so we actually send a text out to anyone that came in the house in that fresh postpartum time. Please don't wear perfumes. Don't even wear deodorant. Like there was a part of me that was like, is this too much? Like, is this really pushing it to set a boundary for that? But I could not, like, because that the pheromones of the baby and the scent of her and me and just I didn't want that process to be interrupted, and we were both so sensitive to it. So I was just like, yeah, I'm sorry, but if you're coming to visit, freshly showered, no perfumes, no even essential oils. And honestly, we actually got a really positive response from that. It was like, sure, like we're happy to respect that. Which I would encourage other women, if they are pregnant and they're planning their postpartum, or like you've got to set these boundaries because they feel good for you and your baby.
I know about that. I know.
You're ready for your nap as well.
I totally agree with that one. The smell thing is something I don't feel people fully get until you get it. Like until you're pregnant or until you're in that really sensitive postpartum space. And it's like really, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like such a shock to your system, and it does something that's really kind of, it's really big, and it's like something that definitely needs to be spoken about so people can educate their family and friends when they're coming into their space. Because yeah, as you say, it's like impacting the pheromones and the way you're connecting and bonding with your baby. And people who wear scents all the time become desensitized. It also can be toxic depending on what you've got in your body. It's really big. I find it really confronting and jarring, especially when I'm pregnant and postpartum. But even I don't now, it's just like my constant state of being. I think so when you become pregnant, things just shift in your body, and I'm so sensitive now.
Totally. I fully agree with you. So even, I mean, because I'm in the women's health space, and when we're dealing with hormones in general, with even without pregnancy and postpartum involved, it's like one of the first things that I'll ask someone when I'm working with them is like, what are your cosmetics like? Let's have a look. Let's go low tox, please. as possible. Because yeah, it's, and especially for that skin on skin postpartum, that's so important for the bonding of the baby and the mother. And like we didn't dress her for like, I think it was like 3 weeks before we dressed her in any clothing, because I just wanted us to be skin on skin together. We also did do a lotus birth, so we kept the placenta attached to her. However, this was a good lesson for me. We wanted to dry, you're meant to dry out the placenta every day when you do a lotus birth, as you would know. And we put rosemary powder, because I saw it on Instagram that someone uses rosemary powder, but the casing that we had between the bag itself that the placenta was in and the placenta, I hadn't wrapped it in a puppy pad or anything like that, and I definitely should have, because the rosemary powder leaked through the bag placenta was in. And obviously, because you've got the baby and the placenta together constantly moving around the bed, I put the placenta bag on the bed, and then she actually lay on the where there had been residue of rosemary and had a full allergic red raw reaction in those first 24 hours. So our first night, it was hectic. And we couldn't see that she was having a reaction because we had all the red lights on, and we were like, it's amazing. I'd only known my baby for 12 hours. I'd not even known her for 24 hours, but I knew that something wasn't right when she was literally fuming, screaming, that first night. Like I'd already gotten to know her a little bit, that very fresh first 12 hours. And I was like, oh my gosh, something's really wrong, Mason. So we turned the lights on, and then only then we worked out like she's had a full-blown reaction. So for anyone ever doing a placenta birth, be careful with the casing. And like anyway, it's like my lessons learned. Even though I work with herbs and stuff so much, like, I mean, gosh, like when you've just given birth, your brain's definitely not on the same logical, wavelength as what it would normally be. But yeah, I still feel guilt for that. So that's something that I have an intention to work on, because for the first 24 hours of her life, like it was the one thing I was avoiding was an allergic reaction, which is, yeah, very, ironic and
But I think it's also a lesson in giving ourselves grace as mothers. Like we can't always be perfect, and that you were doing everything in your capability to give her this beautiful, soft landing earthside. And it's just one of those things as human beings. There's going to be. And there's going to be things that are going to like help us grow and learn. So it's like, I think it's important to give yourself love and compassion as well around little things that happen that are out of your control. Like, it's we hold such high expectations of ourselves, I feel. And you're such an amazing mum, and you gave her such a divine birth and pregnancy, and she's lucky.
thanks for saying that, darling. I definitely, yeah, it's very hard not to have perfectionism with early motherhood as well. Even though you really are, it's just really trial and error a lot of the time. And I'm sure that with each baby, you would do something different every single time. Or you will learn, with each child, or each month or each year, whatever, like as they grow, you're constantly evolving and refining the process.
Just before we go, is there anything that you wanted to like leave people with? Any pearls of wisdom or anything that you felt to share that you haven't?
I think all I want to say is that I find, because I work in this space, I find that when women want to suddenly have a baby or want to think about pregnancy or birth, that that's when they start to want to learn about it or get educated on it or start to engage with empowering themselves around it. And I think, honestly, there's no greater gift you can give yourself as a woman than to look into that now, like, or before you like think that you're ready, because the more you can feel equipped and prepared and have these tools and resources, and also like feel empowered and educated about pregnancy, especially if you're planning to do a natural birth or a home birth, or even if you are planning to do a hospital birth, I think it's really important to be educated around your rights, reproductive rights, and birth rights, so that you can be prepared for anything. And when you empower yourself with your menstrual health and your fertility and your pregnancy and your postpartum and your menopause, like it's all actually interconnected. It's the continuum of empowerment, in a sense, for all of those stages of being a woman. Yeah, I think that's all I want to contribute, because I mean, look, not everyone is like, oh, I feel so drawn to pregnancy or birth or women's, health. Like that's not what I'm saying. It's like every single person. It's not a cookie thing for every woman, but yeah, I just think it's important to feel connected to the mind and body. And one theme that you and I constantly came back to in the pregnancy was intuition, and was how does that feel in your body, which then ripple effect into the birth itself. And honestly, you are miles ahead when you've already got that down pat, like before pregnancy, before birth. And then, yeah, motherhood, I don't really know if there's a manual for that one. Something, I think, just with motherhood, I actually read an Instagram post literally today, which literally resonated with everything I've been feeling at the moment. I just want to touch on that, because if anyone had said that to me, maybe I would have been a little bit more prepared. Maybe I wouldn't, I don't know, for motherhood. But I'll just read it out to you. No one really talks about how much having a baby makes you feel like time isn't your own. People talk about the sleepless nights and the blowouts, but not the quiet grief of losing your time, your autonomy, your ability to just exist without orchestrating every move. And there's quite a few slides I could go on. There's a few more slides that touch on more detail. That's the Perinatal Collective, by the way. Just gonna quote them. And like I was saying before, that's something that I've been processing grief around, is the autonomy of being able to do things whenever you want, whenever you feel like it, and you don't have that as a mother as much. It will be again like that one day, maybe. I don't know, depending on how many kids you have, I guess. But yeah, eventually it'll come full circle and wouldn't change a thing, but that's still real and so valid, I think, for me and for probably a lot of mothers out there.
So important to voice that aspect of motherhood for sure. It's so valid.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much,
Beautiful.
Lucille. Yeah, it's just been such an honor.
Thank you so much for listening to my story and witnessing me in, yeah, throughout pregnancy and birth and becoming a mother. I'm very blessed and I'm excited to listen back to my own story, actually. Like, I'm excited to hear it because, yeah, I honestly, like you said earlier, I think I'm going to be processing this. I think women do process their birth for years and years and years to come. Like, it's a labyrinth that you're walking for a very long time. And sharing the story is so important for like being able to process it as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. For more, you can find me on Instagram at Here to Be Human Podcast. If this space is resonating for you, please like, subscribe, and share so that this podcast can reach more people. See you next time.